This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The 2018 regular session of the West Virginia Legislature ended at midnight Saturday. The final hours were hectic at times. Many bills passed at the last minute and others died on the chamber floors. Senior reporter Dave Mistich was in the thick of things at the Capitol. He spoke with news director Jesse Wright about those final hours.
So, Dave Mistich, thanks for joining us after what was a pretty intense last couple days of the session there. By all accounts, I think we had some indications that it might be fairly calm, but it didn't turn out that way. Can you give us some insight into sort of what happened Friday into Saturday and through Saturday night, especially with the budget?
Right. Well, the Senate had passed their version of the budget on Thursday. They had hoped to get it out Friday. The House, Thursday night, I should say, the House, got to their version of the budget, passed it out, and then, Friday they folded everything in together. As they got to it on Saturday, they did get the budget passed. Of course, that was taking into account this 5% pay raise for teachers, school service personnel, state police, as well as 5% in line items through personnel for all state employees in the budget. I can say that this budget, as we've heard all along, didn't take into account the governor's $58 million in adjusted revenue estimates. With that, of course, they brought about some cuts, particularly to tourism, the Department of Commerce Development Office. And then there's about $10 million in medical services. No one particular line item for Medicaid, but the majority of Republicans have assured people that that will be backfilled and that no... no cuts to Medicaid will be impacted throughout this budget. So a lot going on over the past couple of days to make this thing happen, but they did get it on day 60. So,
which is the first time I've seen it done outside of a special session I've been covering the legislature since about 2005. Definitely the first time. Some people have said it's the first time in decades that that's happened. I know the GOP made a big deal about it. It was a big push of theirs from the beginning of the session, even. So the fact that they got it accomplished in the middle of a strike and with some of these other tweaks that had to happen there is fairly significant, I feel. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, last year they had a $500 million budget gap. The impasse over the past 2 years has stretched into June. I think that, whenever the Republicans took control, this getting a budget by 60 days was a priority for them. They made it clear that that's what they wanted to do. But this year they were able to do it. The governor late in the session added an additional day for Sunday, but they wound up not needing it. So, I think it is significant that they get it by day 60. And like you pointed out, they haven't been able to do that, even with the Democrats in charge for years and years. They weren't able to do it in 60 days. And now the Republicans have, this year. So it is a big deal.
So you talked about cuts and some of the programs that had got some support, tourism, the Community and Technical College bill, which was $7 million for what essentially free tuition for...
Right, that was a grant program that, that bill had cleared the Senate and went over the House. And with everything that happened with the teachers and these pay raises for the teachers and the school employees, that $7 million for the free Community and Technical College programs didn't wind up making it in the budget, or that bill didn't wind up passing to accommodate some of these changes to the budget as the session rolled along.
A lot of the activity Saturday night, late 10:30, the Democrats started making noise about the fact that the bill to tweak and change the medical marijuana system that was set up during last year's legislative session, the bill to tweak that and sort of implement some of the recommendations from the board that was looking at that, that didn't come over from the Senate. The Senate had passed it. It was sitting basically in the House. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened in those last couple hours, some of the back and forth, and then what ultimately happened there?
Right. Well, as the clock ticked towards midnight, the House clerk had received the message from the Senate, but the bill itself, it was House Bill 4345, had been sitting in the clerk's office, but had not made it out to the floor. I mean, you heard from a slew of House Democrats that were asking the Speaker, making motions to bring it to the floor, and I think there was a lot of questions about whether or not the Speaker was stalling. I think House Democrats were, you know, it'd be fair to say that they were accusing him of that, and the Speaker in the end did not allow that bill to go through before midnight. So, and I should point out, we heard from the advisory board of the medical cannabis program that were basically asking, you know, lawmakers to get this done because they needed it to ensure the functionality of this program whenever it opens up in July 2019. There was also some questions about some technical issues in the bill. I know that attorneys over in the House, I've been told on Saturday by Delegate Riley Moore, who was the lead sponsor of that bill, he told me that attorneys were poring over that, saw a lot of technical errors. Some money was going to be transferred into a fund that doesn't even exist. So, you know, there was still some time to get that done and to make some changes and to get it back and forth across the rotunda. In the end, it just didn't happen.
Was there any discussion late Saturday night into Sunday morning about whether there might be a special session around that bill, whether there's a way to kind of bring it back and implement those changes that the board had sought?
We have not heard anything about that. I mean, given the fact that program is set up to go on July 1st, 2019, and everything that we've heard about that particular bill, you know, there's some issues with the funding of the program to make it sustainable and direct some monies to keep the program alive. One would hope that if that bill is a priority, that the governor would call a special session. We haven't heard anything from his office at all on that one. And so I think that what we're likely to see are advocates for that program, lead sponsors of that bill, of course, Delegate Riley Moore. And over in the Senate, you heard a lot about that issue from Senator Richard Ojeda. So the two of them plus the advisory board, you're probably going to hear a lot on that issue from them in the next, you know, couple months to try to ensure that those changes get made. You know, whether or not the governor heeds that call remains to be seen. But I am almost 100% sure that you're going to hear a lot about that moving forward.
So that was one of the bigger bills that didn't pass. But what about the major ones that did?
Well, you know, House Bill 4006 essentially dismantles the Department of Education and the Arts. You know, of course, we should note West Virginia Public Broadcasting is an agency under that cabinet, so to speak. That bill, you know, essentially strips away the secretary position, would remove a lot of state agencies underneath that umbrella, put them in different places such as Commerce or underneath independent agencies under the governor's office. There's some questions about funding for volunteer programs like AmeriCorps and, you know, this Energy Express program, some federal grants involved. So the governor, you know, everyone was asking him whether or not he plans to sign that bill. You know, he said he's going to take a good hard look at it. Obviously, there's some political implications with that bill, with the secretary position being removed. U.S. Senator Joe Manchin's wife, you know, that it remains to be seen whether or not the governor signs it. Another bill I should point out that passed that was very controversial on the last day as well is House Bill 4001, which expands some work requirements for able-bodied adults without dependents who receive SNAP benefits. You know, there was a nine-county pilot program established by the state DHHR that looked to places that had low unemployment numbers and required people receiving these benefits to go work or volunteer and, you know, and to receive those benefits. The state DHHR actually said that program didn't work. It stripped people these benefits, but didn't actually show an improvement in employment numbers. So this bill was very controversial over the course of the session. I should note that the final version of it removes some exemptions to what able-bodied adults without dependents actually means. You know, over the course of the legislative process, some of those exemptions were put in this bill to allow for veterans to be exempted or, you know, folks who are taking care of elderly people or, you know, women who are pregnant, all these different, you know, different conditions or different exemptions. That was stripped out of the bill. The other thing that was actually put into the bill is that after October 1st, 2022, that counties would not be eligible to ask for a federal waiver you know, that would require these work requirements. So, you know, this bill is extremely controversial. It's definitely something we'll be keeping an eye on for sure.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for all your work throughout the session. Did a fantastic job covering pretty much every minute that went by. And we'll be hearing more from you soon on most of these issues.
Thanks, Jesse.
That was senior reporter Dave Mistich speaking with news director Jesse Wright about the final hours of the 2018 West Virginia legislative session. The coal industry's decline has hit hard for many Ohio Valley school districts. Tax revenue from mining has decreased, along with the local economy, while rising electricity rates make it a struggle to keep the schools open. But as Benny Becker reports, there's no shortage of students who are trying to create new energy futures in the latest in the Ohio Valley Resource Series Changing Course.
Arley Boggs Elementary sits between Kentucky's two tallest mountains in an area that once had a booming coal economy. 10 years ago, there were over 1,000 coal miners employed here in Letcher County. Today, there are just 28.
Our community was left with many unemployed miners. Paying bills have become a hardship for many. We wondered what we could do to help reduce costs in our homes and our schools.
Our answer was literally right over our heads the entire time.
Nicholas Sturgill and Allison Pendleton were part of an 8th grade class that researched solar panels and got a set installed on their school's roof. Their teacher, Myrtle Boggs, explains.
The energy that we will save would be $600 in a school year. We get paid from our district for saving energy, so we're hoping to purchase more solar panels and then eventually get to where we are using very little energy at our school.
Many schools across the Ohio Valley region are struggling with the rising cost of energy. The region's heavy reliance on coal has led power rates to rise faster here than in other parts of the country. At a recent hearing on a proposed power rate increase in eastern Kentucky, the state commissioner of education, Stephen Pruitt, argued that schools wouldn't be able to handle any increased cost.
Right now, many of our schools are literally going week to week to be able to keep the doors open.
The Kentucky Public Service Commission did not grant a rate increase in that case, but the decision brought other hardships for schools. Commissioners had the power company cut costs by scrapping the program that paid customers who invest in energy efficiency. Schools in Letcher County have benefited from the program, which let them upgrade lighting, appliances, heating, and air conditioning. They've managed to lower power bills by more than 10%, saving $130,000 each year.
Every time we did one of those projects, we got a rebate, and that cut our cost in half. Well, we don't do that anymore, so we have to shoulder the whole cost.
That's Sherry Sexton, who oversees energy conservation for schools in Letcher County. Sexton and utility analysts agree there will likely be more power rate increases in coming years. So it's all hands on deck to save energy and cut costs.
These students do little projects, like they'll go around and see how much electricity a soda machine uses and taking the lights out of the front of the machine. So that cuts back on usage and it gets them thinking about how can we cut back at home.
In nearby Floyd County, Kentucky, students have been building models to study how and where buildings lose heat. I spoke to Olivia Stumbo, a 7th grader at Allen Central Middle School.
We had to make a paper house. We measured it using a heat gun as an example about how heat is lost throughout houses.
Do you feel like you learned much from that?
Yes, a lot. The big goal is to apply insulation, and we need to educate the others.
Like the solar effort in Letcher County, Stumbo's project received funding from a regional school district cooperative. Belfry High School in Pike County, Kentucky, used funding from the cooperative to allow students in a 9th grade class to work on one technology project for the whole year. Ryan Varney is part of a group with ambitions to change the future of energy.
So what we're trying to do is create hydrogen gas to then put into a fuel cell to create electricity.
Ryan's teammate, Elissa Stanley, says her motivation comes from what she's seen happen to the local coal mines, where her dad has worked for over 30 years.
It's dying down, and I think there definitely needs to be something there to back it up.
In just 3 weeks, the team of four freshmen created a fuel cell that could propel this model car. Down the road, they hope to help create a new energy economy here in the coal fields. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
The series is supported by the Solutions Journalism Network. The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.